Hey, this is Stephen Curry from the Golden State Warriors, number 30. And you listen to Drive Time Sports on KOAL 750 AM.
It was 30 years in the making, 30 years since the last time Utah had the All-Star game, and now the festivities have come and they are gone. And now we're gearing up for the final 2022 games of the regular season. That's what we're going to talk about today. Joining me right now over the phone, we have James Holis. He's half of the Dunktales pod. James, always kind enough to join us to talk NBA basketball. James, again, great to get you on today. I appreciate the time.
Yeah, man. Any day that Russell Westbrook is not joining my Celtics is a good day.
Woo, boy. Man, he's trying to become the first player since Steve Nash in 2006 to take down both LA franchises in one season.
Yeah, and he might just do it. I don't understand what the Clippers are getting into, but we'll get to there. Let's talk.
Yeah, we'll talk about Westbrook in a moment. Let's start by talking about All-Star Weekend. Big deal here for the state of Utah to get this game. And James, you know, last week I talked about the idea of sports fans being entitled. You know, if we buy a prized fight, we think we're entitled to a brawl. No, we're not entitled to anything. However, I feel completely different about the NBA All-Star Game. I have long given up getting upset at the lack of entertainment that All-Star Games and professional sports, not just the NBA, but professional sports bring us in general. And last night, I watched this game for about a half. And I really feel bad for anyone that paid money to go see this. You know, I hope that if you paid money to go see this, you knew exactly what you were walking into. But I have to ask the question, what can be done to fix this, if anything at all?
I mean, unless you're going to incentivize guys and tell them, like, you know, I don't know, $2 million to every, or $5 million to every player on the winning team or something, like nothing. And I don't think it's broken. I guess I'm in the minority here. But I realize that the All-Star Weekend is what it is. It's one big promotional event. You want to get those guys out there for pictures and smiles and sound bites. They don't care about any of the games or the competitions. They don't care about that. And once I wish as fans as a whole turn to accept that, it would make the experience that much better because you would know it. I didn't turn on the All-Star Game at all. I called the highlights today because I just know that the players don't care about the game. They're not going to compete. They're going to have some highlights, and the highs are great. But, and it is what it is. I think people are pining for those, 87, 85 All-Star games when players actually just go hard. That's just, those days are over. Like, you know, it just is what it is. The spirit of competition, these guys are playing for championships, and they're jostling for playoff positions. So this weekend, they all just kind of chill out, and it's okay.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I mean, we grew up in an era where All-Star games were competitive back when it was East versus West. And, I mean, even going back to when I was a younger kid, just going, I remember all kinds of great All-Star games, all kinds of great All-Star moments. Looking at it at this particular time, I guess what frustrates me as a basketball fan is it's a glorified layup line. And I think your two guys, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, both approached this in a matter of, hey, we are here to entertain the people. Doesn't have to be for blood. We're going to go out, we're going to entertain, and we're going to at least show some semblance of defense. And I think we got that from Tatum last night. He was exciting in the second half of that game. But James, ultimately, when I look at it, I guess the problem is I know the guys are going harder in pickup games in the offseason than they are here. And this is what this is supposed to be. It's supposed to be the greatest pickup game in the world. That's what we're supposed to see. So, I mean, I don't know if maybe you could change the timing of it. I don't know if the NBA needs to do this in the offseason. I don't know. But I miss the competitiveness. I really do.
So, I guess my thing is in the offseason, they're actually working on their game. And that they want to actually have games be stuff to bring into the new season so they can be better NBA players. This is literally just, they have interviews, they have photo ops, and then there's there's a game. There's a game for an hour and a half, 2 hours, and these guys don't want to tax their bodies. I get it. Like, we've seen it a couple years ago, or maybe, yeah, when the games are close, they'll compete, and I like that. But also, like, these guys, they're tired, man. It's a long season, I get it. I don't trip about it. What I like to see, LeBron James played a few minutes. Giannis played, a couple possessions, that's it. Yeah, so it is what it is, man. I also think these guys now, they make so much money in their brands. They don't want to get embarrassed on defense, right? They want some guy to break them down, and it's a viral moment. And they don't want to get hurt. So I get it. I can kind of get it.
Do you get into any of the festivities, any of the other events, the dunk contest, three-point contest? I actually thought the field for the three-point contest was entertaining. I felt like we had some of the most elite, healthy three-point shooters in that particular contest. The dunk contest and skills challenge never do anything for me, but I'm curious as to your thoughts on those three.
Absolutely. I'm 100% with you in lockstep. The three-point competition is the only one that catches my eye because that's like the purest kind of shooting competition. We've all done it at some level. And so that is just, you know, hey, who makes the most shots? And that's compelling. It's always compelling. So I think the three-point competition is the only one that's really engaging to me. The skill competition is a joke. And I don't know. I just don't care. And then, yeah, dunk contest. It's been slowly dying for years now. There's only so many different ways people can do windmills, and you know how many people, how many times you see somebody jump over two guys or whatever. It's fine. I just don't. Yeah, it doesn't work me up. I'm glad for Mac McClung. That was cool. Put his name on the map. But you know, I get it. People keep complaining about stars not being in dunk competition. It's the exact same thing as the playing defense in the All-Star game. They don't want to come out and have a bad – it's a lose-lose, right? If you're a star already, it's not going to really raise your Q rating. And then if you have a bad showing, you're going to become a meme. So I get it.
Again, James Olis, our guest right now. Again, he's half of the Dunk Tales pod. We'll talk about that in a moment. James, we started by talking about some other news. The Jazz officially waived Russell Westbrook this morning, and he is signed by the Clippers. I didn't think this would happen, really. Last week, we had a full segment or two here on the show talking about where would be the next landing spot for Westbrook. And I thought, sure, why not Chicago, right? You got the Billy Donovan ties. You got the idea of Lonzo Ball maybe not being healthy the rest of the season. They're on the brink of getting into the playoffs. They can get the play-in game. Sure, Chicago seems fine. The Clippers, to me, just seem like a ridiculous spot. It just didn't make sense to me. Lo and behold, the Clippers, they nabbed him up today.
It definitely feels like a desperate grasping at straws move. You know, some people say, oh, it's high risk, high reward, low risk, whatever. It just, he doesn't fit. I know that, you know, Ty, you know, the coach over there, Ty Lue, is a good coach, but like, did he clamor for this? You know, Paul George made a lot of noise about it, and is this kowtowing to their stars? It just doesn't seem like you just got rid of a guy in John Wall who's been probably a better version of Westbrook as far as knowing his limitations. So, yeah, man, this sounds almost like a scorpion and a frog thing. And, you know, the Clippers think they could be the one to ferry Russell Westbrook to the promised land, but he's going to sting them like he always does.
I don't see where he fits. I really don't. And I see a team that's actually played better basketball as of late. I mean, if you're not paying attention to the standings, the Clippers have worked their way all the way up into the 4 seed. I don't, you know, maybe it's a name thing. I don't know. But I go back to the trade deadline, and I thought the Clippers did just enough. They did what they needed to do at the deadline. To me, this just doesn't make sense. I mean, is it a depth piece? What are you expecting Russell Westbrook to bring to the table over the final 20-plus games of the regular season into the postseason? I don't know. Can you come up with anything? Like, can you think of anything that the Clippers are hoping to get out of this?
The only thing, I can't take away from his competitive spirit and his drive. So when they put him in, he's going to attack the basket. He's going to, you know, go balls to the wall as far as offensively, get him out in transition. But, yeah, man, the decision-making has been bad. The shooting has been bad. Those weird mind-bending turnovers where he just kind of slings it somewhere or just fumbles it. I don't know, man. I don't know. You already got guys who need the ball in their hands, like a lot, with Norm Powell, Kawhi, and Paul George. And you just got another center, so and he's a non-shooting center. So I'm at a loss. I'm really at a loss unless – for Russ Westbrook's sake, I hope that somehow he can change the perception about him. But, you know, hey, just because you skin your cat and paint it pink doesn't mean it's a pig. You know what I mean? So, I don't know.
There's another team picking up another LA guy, UCLA guy, and Kevin Love, the Miami Heat, grabbing Kevin Love off the buyout market after he clears waivers. I believe that Kevin Love can actually play a pretty sizable role for Miami in the front court. Here's a team that right now fighting to get into that top six. I think they have a great chance to get into that top six, especially considering that Brooklyn and the Knicks are in front of them. Kevin Love, this makes a tad bit more sense to me, James.
Absolutely. That is a really good move for the Miami Heat. Miami feels like they're a little stagnant, a little stale. They're always going to, you know, at their very best, they're really good, but they have to be playing like at optimum efficiency to be at their very best. So, yeah, this is another guy who's spaced the floor. We know he can still rebound a little bit in a small role. Besides Bam, he'll work because he's not going to be, you know, cluttering the middle. You can even throw him out there a little bit at center for a few minutes and see what he got, right? This is definitely a low-risk, high-reward move for Miami, because if it doesn't work out, then, you know, just shake his hand and say goodbye. So, yeah, definitely a good move for them. They got a decent player. Let's see what he has left in the tank.
Yeah, I mean, again, someone would say, well, wait, can't the Clippers just wave goodbye to Russell Westbrook if this doesn't work? Yes, they could, but I think when you look at Kevin Love, we know what we're getting. We know what he can still do, right? There's no question into what he can bring to a front court is where we're questioning what Westbrook can bring to a back court.
That's exactly what it is, man. With Kevin Love, we know that he, even like last year, he was a big part of what Cleveland did. He can still shoot. He still can be a serviceable rotation guy, almost like a Blake Griffin, right, where he doesn't play for 3-4 games at a time. You plug him in for 10, 15 minutes. He doesn't take things off the floor. He knows the limitations. Like, that's what you want. It's stability, you know. You want consistency and stability from your role players. Russ has been anything but consistent or stable. He just takes up so much oxygen, so... As good of a pickup this is for Miami, I think Russ is a questionable pickup for the Clippers.
Is it shocking to you that Cleveland couldn't make this work, at least for the final, I don't know, 20 games of the regular season with Kevin Love? Because when I look at this team, Cleveland's better than Miami. And when I look at their front court, there is a spot for Kevin Love. I mean, it's not as if that Cleveland is a team just overloaded with talent in the front court and there's just no place for Kevin Love. Does that surprise you a bit?
A little bit, especially since they did find a, you know, he seemed content with his role last year. I haven't looked at the numbers, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I think like his role has shrunk a lot this year. And you know what? This is where ego and pride come into play. He was once a perennial all-star, an all-NBA type guy. And sure, he knows he's not who he used to be, but he wants to actually produce and be part of, like, feel like he's being productive, even in his advanced age. I mean, they gave him that contract. He's still getting paid like a star, so... I could understand his, it's funny. We always say, well, a guy should sacrifice for a championship. And that's fine, but these guys, you know, they're wired differently than most. So, if his role was going to be reduced even more, I could see him going to them and, you know, they came to an amicable separation.
Yeah, I mean, he's averaging, I believe, 20 minutes a game. I think he's played in like 40 games this season. It is a decreased role. You know what's crazy to me, James? When this news broke last week, I was looking into it. He's been in Cleveland for 8 seasons. Can you believe that?
I want to say, and tell me if I'm wrong, he spent more time in Cleveland than he did in Minnesota. Is that right?
Yeah, at this point in time in his career, yeah. It's amazing. Like, I had a double take on that.
That's pretty, and it's crazy that like he's been in the league for almost 15 years now. You know what I mean? So that's, I think, so I don't know. It's incredible how the league has evolved since his time in Minnesota. And, 8 years, that's a long time.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy to think about. James, we don't have any basketball until Thursday, so it's a little silent over the next few days. What are you most looking forward to? What storyline, what team is most interesting to you? And any particular topic regarding the NBA when we resume on Thursday, heading down the final stretch? What are you looking forward to most?
So Denver was just chugging along, and they seem to have the West in a chokehold. But now Phoenix now is going to have a healthy Devin Booker and Kevin Durant. I'm looking forward to seeing how they mesh with and Chris Paul. So they gutted their depth, but they definitely upgraded their starting five. So we'll see how they play together. Kind of rejuvenated, right? I think that the Suns window was kind of, you know, like it was closing. There was some issues, and this is a different jump start. I'm looking forward to seeing how the Mavericks look with Kyrie and Luka long term, and you know, I think maybe get used to each other. Because after that nice little 2-game spurt with Kyrie by himself, they've lost 3 in a row now. And Kyrie had a back issue. So it's almost like a microcosm of everything with Kyrie. You know, up and down, explosive fourth quarter, still lose. And now he missed a game that, you know, they could have used him in, and then he plays in the All-Star game. It's pretty crazy. I'm looking forward to, obviously, the Celtics. Their starting five only played, like, 6 games together, like less than – you know, less than 100 minutes together. That's Al Horford, Rob Williams, Tatum, Brown, and Marcus Smart. And Marcus Smart just came back. Brown's going to be back on the court. And now we should see how can Boston make a final push. What else? What else we got? Oh, and obviously Russell Westbrook. Let's see how he works with the Clippers. And the Lakers has got other pieces, and you know, LeBron came back for one game. Let's see how they kind of gel, because I think they're going to be much better down the stretch.
Yeah, in the West, I think there's four teams that really intrigue me over the course of the final 20 games. Because right now, this includes the play-in round. If we take 10 teams in the Western Conference, the Thunder, the Pelicans, the Warriors, and the Lakers. One of those four teams that I just named is not getting into the playoffs. I mean, the Jazz are on the outside looking in, they're going to remain there. The Blazers are on the outside looking in, they're going to remain there. The Lakers are on the outside looking in, they are much better, right? So I'm really curious to see those four teams, because I think one of them dip. I do believe Minnesota is going to get in. It's New Orleans, it's Golden State, it's OKC, and it's the Lakers. That's what's interesting to me in the Western Conference. I still believe that Denver and Phoenix, I think they're ahead above everybody right now in the Western Conference. But the play-in round, to me, those are the four teams I'm looking at.
If Zion can't get himself on the court and up to speed and healthy, then the Pelicans are dead in the water. Brandon Ingram's nice, and CJ's nice, but we've seen without Zion, they are a subpar team. He's a superstar on the court, but they can't depend on him being healthy. So I'm going to say it would be the Pelicans. And I think the Timberwolves are a step behind them because they're so Jekyll and Hyde. They can look great, and Anthony Edwards can look like a superstar. But it's, you know, the lack of scoring now without Karl-Anthony Towns around shows. They'll get a big lead and they'll just fritter it away because they can't consistently score. So, but if I had to bet money, I'd say the Pelicans.
And in the Eastern Conference, I'm glad you brought up the Celtics. I just got to point this out. I said this to you off the air, and I got to mention again right now. I don't think, James, there's a better culture in the NBA than what's going on in Boston, and that's saying something considering everything that went down this offseason. I think every franchise in the NBA right now should be envious of what's going on in Boston. And I don't know that we could have said that 6 months ago.
I'm going to say that going back to the Kyrie time in Boston, it really humbled me as a fan because I had these expectations and it went so disastrously wrong. And then Kemba ended up so kind of poorly. So this is all found money for me, and I love it. To have, you know, last year's great coaching job being sullied in the summer, and then an assistant step in and do the job that Joe Mazzulla is doing is incredible. Tatum and Brown really seeming to embrace the pain of losing the finals, and like the way that, you know, Boston started off so strong with this incredible shooting, and then they had a dip that looked absolutely atrocious in December, and how they bounced back. They seem really resilient. They're deep. They have two guys or three guys come off the bench who could start for most teams. Especially with Malcolm Brogdon and Derek White. Derek White started a lot of games, though. But, yeah, I'm excited, and my fingers are crossed. I'm holding my breath that we go into the playoffs healthy, because I think Boston has a real chance to return to the finals and bring another championship home.
I agree. Milwaukee's won 12 in a row, but outside of that, to me, I don't know. I still feel as if Philly, Cleveland, everybody else behind those two are a step behind Boston and Milwaukee, and I think we're starting to see that as well. James, we're going to have plenty of time to talk about that in the future. Before I let you go, of course, tell us about the Dunk Tales pod going into the second half of the season. It's flying by right now.
I just want to tell you that Boston beat the Sixers with, like, almost no regular starters, and then they took the Milwaukee Bucks to the brink in the overtime with, like, no starters. So I'm not too pressed about them. But, yeah, it's me and my buddy JP, who is I got to call him to make sure he's alive and he's okay because he's a Clippers fan. We just talked basketball. And, yeah, I'm going to have to console him because this is a tough break. Me and him talked about this before. So Dunk Tales, you can find us on all streaming podcasts. And I'm at Snotty Drippin. Homage to the great Scottie Pippen on all socials. And, yeah, let's talk basketball, man. I'm excited. The home stretch.
Appreciate it, James. We'll do it again next week.
Thank you, brother.
And with that, we are out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Always fun to be along with you on the afternoon drive. And we'll be back to do it again tomorrow. We're going to talk some high school basketball. We got a lot of high school basketball to get into this week. Coach Ray Jones will join us on the show tomorrow, and we'll talk some football offseason storylines starting to pop up. I want to thank Monty Christiansen for taking out the time to join us, and, of course, James Holis. We'll see you tomorrow. Be safe. We are out.